This is the Nuance Podcast by Medicine Explained. We're your hosts, Amanda
and Dan.
We talk to experts on health, the human experience, and the intersection of climate and human health.
We explore the nuance that's been lost in today's conversation. We don't take ads because we want to keep our information unbiased.
But we do need your support. So leave a review on Apple or Spotify.
And share with your friends or on social media.
In today's conversation, we spoke with Dr. Akhil, who is a Harvard-trained physician who practices integrative medicine, blending his conventional medical expertise with holistic approaches, including functional medicine and Ayurveda. Dr. Akhil attended Harvard University and graduated magna cum laude with a Bachelor of Arts in Biochemical Sciences. He earned an MD from the University of California, San Francisco, and completed family medicine residency training at Stanford University. He then graduated from a fellowship in integrative medicine with Dr. Andrew Weil at the University of Arizona and received certification in mind-body medicine from the Georgetown University Center. Dr. Akhil is the department chair for integrative medicine at the Sutter Health Institute for Health and Healing. He also serves as IHH Physician Director for Community Education and leads their educational initiatives and programs. Dr. Akhil has been a consultant with the Medical Board of California for many years. A widely known speaker and educator, he is the author of The Tiger Protocol, which is his latest book, and The Paleovedic Diet, a complete program to burn fat, increase energy, and reverse disease. As he has done for 2+ decades, Dr. Akhil sees patients and conducts clinical research studies in the San Francisco Bay Area. In his free time, he enjoys playing tennis, traveling, and spending time with his wife and daughter. Today, we chat about the Tiger Protocol, the root causes of autoimmune diseases, and why the prevalence of autoimmune disease is increasing. We talk about how toxicants impact health and how diet can help relieve symptoms. We also offer many practical tips throughout the podcast. This was a really interesting conversation, and we hope you enjoy it. Now, on to the podcast. Hi, Dr. Akhil. Welcome to the podcast. I heard your feature on one of my favorite podcasts, so I'm really excited to have you on for a conversation today.
Oh, thank you for having me on the podcast, Amanda.
Awesome. So we do record your bio, and our listeners will have heard that, but I do love to start with just kind of a one-liner about yourself, because I think there's some nuances in people's introduction that we miss when just reading a formatted bio. So can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Oh, sure. I'm a Harvard-trained physician, and I practice integrative medicine, which refers to integrating evidence-based holistic therapies along with conventional medicines. So that's my passion.
Awesome. So I'd love to kind of just start with your background. How did you become interested in a more holistic approach to treating patients, where you were blending your conventional medicine background with functional medicine and Ayurvedic medicine?
Yes. So it actually started with my own illness experience, which was now 20 years ago, luckily, but it was during my medical school years where I developed this mystery illness, and I had a lot of weight loss, chronic pain, severe fatigue, and I couldn't use a computer or even sit upright in a chair. So I actually had to stop my medical training, because the conventional treatments like anti-inflammatory drugs and physical therapy wasn't really helping, you know. And so that was the first time by necessity I sought out alternatives and met with an Ayurvedic doctor who taught me a lot about diet, and then also met with the functional medicine doctor during a year off where I was on a quest to heal myself. And the good news is, yeah, by implementing those alternative modalities, I felt better than ever before. And that's when I decided I wanted to get trained in those systems to help my future patients.
Can you explain to us a little bit about what Ayurvedic medicine is?
Oh, yes. Ayurvedic medicine is the traditional medicine from India, and it's been around more than a few 3,000 years, and it really emphasizes diet. So really the food as medicine, and then also uses spices as therapeutic agents. Also, they prescribe herbs quite a lot, different plant compounds. And then there's a big emphasis on individuality, like each person has a unique constitution and a customized diet and body type and so forth.
Very interesting. What's your favorite herb or spice?
Oh, I think it has to be turmeric because, it's just so good in terms of not only an anti-inflammatory, but a really good antimicrobial in terms of getting rid of bad bugs in the body.
Wonderful. So you have published two books now, The Tiger Protocol and which diet is it?
Paleo-Vedic
diet, yes. And so your most recent one was the Tiger Protocol, and that focuses a lot on autoimmunity. So could you just describe to us what is an autoimmune disease and what are some of the symptoms that can manifest in folks who experience this disease process?
Yes. So the immune system is something that is supposed to defend your body against illness and infections. But in autoimmune disease, it actually turns on itself and starts to attack the body, attack tissues it's not supposed to. And the inflammation, depending on where it occurs in the body, that's where you get the symptoms. So it can vary from joint pains to neurological symptoms if the brain is affected, to digestive symptoms if it's an inflammatory bowel disease. So quite a wide variety of symptoms, but they all have the same underlying root causes.
So if someone, I know we don't want to self-diagnose, but what are some of the symptoms that if people haven't been finding answers in the conventional medicine system, or even, just trying to figure themselves out and why they're having these symptoms, what are some of these things that they can experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's consistent with what the research shows is that the average autoimmune disease patient takes 4 years and requires visits with, I think, 5 different physicians to get the diagnosis. So it's often challenging because you're right, in medicine, this is not like the first thing we think of. So I always encourage my patients then, if they have any unexplained symptoms, whether it be fatigue or joint pain or neurological symptoms, to actually push their doctors to rule out autoimmune conditions and, ask them to include those in the workup.
And I would love to get into the Tiger Protocol. So could you explain to us what that is and what it entails?
Yes. So TIGER is an acronym. It stands for these 5 root causes, which I found in my research are the drivers of immune system regulation and multiple other chronic diseases besides just autoimmune disease, even contributing to diabetes, obesity, heart disease. So really fundamental factors for health. So the T in TIGER is toxins, which doesn't refer to like smoking or obvious toxins like that. It's more like low-level environmental pollutants that we're all exposed to. And I think that's the missing piece of the puzzle often for autoimmune disease. I is infections, which could be bacterial, viral, parasitic, fungal. And my focus with the protocol is on making the body inhospitable to infections so it can take care of whatever's there. The G is gut, which refers to the microbiome, all the critically important gut bacteria. And the gut is the foundation of health in the whole body and also most of the immune system. 70% of the immune cells are located in the gut-associated lymphoid tissue, so critical to address the gut. E refers to eating, right? So the diet is very important. Food sensitivities can play a role. And I also like to use therapeutic foods to heal the gut and reduce inflammation. And then the R is rest. So that refers to the mind-body connection and addressing stress, which is a proven driver of autoimmune diseases.
I think that the term mind-body is thrown around a lot. So do you mind just elucidating a little bit about what is the mind-body connection?
Yes, you're right. Yeah. And I think that it is important to clarify. So basically, the mind-body connection is where any kind of stress in the mind, like thoughts or emotions or other stressful experiences, cause issues in the body because of the close kind of two-way connection between the mind and the body. That is why the research has shown consistently that stress is involved not only in the development of autoimmune disease, but also the cause of flare-ups and exacerbations, because it can lead to those physical symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes too, when we think of stress, we think of, you know, I'm stressed because I have a lot of work to do. But like you said, with the tea, the environmental toxins, there's a lot of other stressors that can cause quote unquote stress on the body.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And it was actually very interesting. I had a podcast earlier today with someone about plastics and environmental toxins with plastics and how they're found everywhere in their endocrine disruptors and carcinogens. And I'm sure they're contributing to some of the autoimmune diseases that we see out there. What are some of the main toxicants in the environment that folks might not be as familiar with that you found to be some of the biggest contributors to autoimmune diseases?
Oh, sure. So in my book, I review 20 different toxins that have each been associated with increased autoimmune disease risk. So in terms of categories, there are heavy metals, which include things like mercury, lead, arsenic, and so forth. There are the pesticides like glyphosate and other types of organophosphate pesticides that are used a lot in agriculture. There are waterborne toxins, which are actually very common. The research shows that there's quite a bit of contamination of our drinking water with toxins like perchlorate, which is an environmental pollutant, PFAS, which is something that is also an endocrine disruptor, and even pesticides. So water is crucial to filter the drinking water. And I totally agree about the plastics. I think I recommend avoiding plastic water bottles and just having a good water filter. And then there's also BPA. So these are part of the endocrine disrupting compounds like BPA. There's PFOA, which is like from Teflon. There are phthalates as well. So those are just some of the examples.
It seems kind of like they're ubiquitous in the environment. So what are some of the things that you recommend and some of the things that you do in your everyday life to help reduce these exposures?
Yes, it is true that they are ubiquitous, but I always tell people there's hope because research shows that making changes can actually have rapid impact in the toxin level in the body within a week. So, for example, if you switch to a more organic diet, you can lower pesticide levels in the urine by 80% in 5 days. In your personal care products, which is another hidden source of toxins, if you take out things like phthalates and parabens, you can lower the levels by almost 50% in just 3 days. Want to lower levels of flame retardants in the urine, actually hand washing and vacuuming, because dust is where a lot of these home-based toxins accumulate, that reduced those levels by, I think, 43% in about a week. So I think, eating organic when possible, filtering the drinking water, opening the windows to get plenty of air exchange at home, dusting and vacuuming because of that issue with dust is important. And then one other thing that's been shown in the literature is that removing your shoes and leaving them at the front door is very beneficial because the bottoms of shoes have been tested to have heavy metals, pesticides, harmful bacteria. So you don't want to be tracking those all through the house. So those are just some tips to reduce exposure.
Something that I really like to use is the EWG website for products. That's been very helpful for me because it's so hard to navigate all of the different brands. And they do a really good job at reviewing which ones have the most pesticides or toxicants or whatever associated with them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I like their website. And then they have the Skin Deep database, which is great for your personal care products.
Absolutely. I would love to get into a little bit of a controversial topic about organic food. Yeah. I think there's a lot of discussion around the benefits of organic and whether it actually impacts our health. I'm very interested in the food system. I'm working on some policies for regenerative agriculture and increasing food as medicine. So it's a topic near and dear to the heart, but I hear a lot of folks saying that organic might just be a way to fill the pockets of organic farmers, and it not necessarily is an impact to our health. So do you mind describing like why organic might be a better option if we have the opportunity to purchase it?
Yes, absolutely. And the reason is because pesticides are one of those clinically researched toxins that impact the immune system and also disrupt your metabolism, contribute to obesity or metabolic issues. I recommend that people shop at their local farmers market and just talk to the farmers, because many of them can't afford organic certification, but they may not use pesticides. And as long as, you know, I hear that something is pesticide free, I'm happy to buy it, even if it's not organic. So I think the main issue is just reducing pesticide exposure, and getting organic or pesticide free is the best way to do that.
I love that answer, which is a perfect way to fit into the Nuance podcast, which is the title of our podcast, because there's a lot more nuance to it, because the organic certification, like you said, is actually very, very expensive. And for a lot of small farmers, they can't necessarily afford that, even if they are doing a more pesticide-free way of farming.
Right.
Wonderful. So, has there been an increase in autoimmune diseases? And I think this fits in a little bit to what we were already discussing, but why do you think the prevalence is increasing?
Yes, there's been a huge explosion in autoimmune diseases, and that's part of what I'm trying to raise awareness about, is this epidemic. Some conditions have increased by 500%, like by fivefold, and some even by 5,000% just in the past like few decades. So clearly it's not our genes, because the genetics doesn't change, you know, that quickly at all. And so what is really occurring is there's a perfect storm of these factors that are all contributing to disrupt the immune systems and cause autoimmunity, a rise in environmental toxins, the food supply, increase like infections and drug-resistant bacteria, increases in stress. So all of these things are, and of course, the gut microbiome collectively is really deteriorated a lot. So all of these things are the perfect storm of factors for the rise in autoimmunity.
And I'm sure that this is a more difficult question to answer, because like you said, in Ayurvedic medicine, everyone is an individual. So once someone thinks that they have autoimmune disease, went to their physician or healthcare provider, and were given the diagnosis of an autoimmune disease, what are some of the first steps that you recommend someone to take?
Couple things. One is to give attention to the diet in terms of nutrient density of the diet, getting more prebiotic foods, which are foods that feed those good bacteria, getting more fermented foods, which boost the diversity of those good bacteria. So using food to start healing the gut and impacting the immune system that way, I think is very powerful. So I think that's definitely something I would encourage. And then I would tell people to start with toxins, because I do think they're the biggest unrecognized factor. And taking those steps, like I mentioned, can have rapid effects within a week. So reducing toxin exposure and then boosting your intrinsic detox capacities is the approach that I recommend.
I have a little bit of a hard time with recommendations on water specifically for patients, because as you can see in my background, I have a Berkey filter, which is not cheap. So what are some of the ways that folks can filter their water or know that their water sources are not as contaminated and maybe can drink from the tap if they can't necessarily afford a filter?
Yes. So I think one way to check your drinking water quality is there is also the Environmental Working Group has a database on their website where you can plug in your zip code and then see data about the water in the municipal system. And if it's pretty good, then that's a good sign in terms of like encouraging that. I still recommend a filter. And if you can't afford like a Berkey or a reverse osmosis system, which are more expensive, I actually recommend the Zero, Z-E-R-O water filter. I have no affiliation with them, but they have shown good results in research compared to other countertop filters like the Brita and so forth. And the Zero seems to be more effective at removing toxins out of the water. And it's just a countertop pitcher that is about $40. So that's a good option. Mm.
Thank you. I actually haven't heard of that brand before. That's very helpful.
Yeah, Zero.
Zero. Okay. And then I have been gluten intolerant since I was in about sixth grade. My mom has always been very into diet and nutrition, even though she's not part of the healthcare field. And when I was starting to have brain fog, she thought that maybe it was something to do with my diet. So we went off gluten and I've felt so much better ever since. You have a section in your book about gluten intolerance. So mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of interesting about the history of wheat, how it's changed, and how it's impacted the prevalence of gluten intolerance or celiac disease.
Yes, that is a big factor because the wheat has evolved a lot in the past 100 years. So when your grandparents were eating wheat, it was actually much lower in gluten than our modern wheat. And also modern wheat has many more chromosomes with all the hybridization. So it's just much harder to digest. It's got a lot more proteins that your body's not familiar with. And then with gluten sensitivity, I remind people it's on a spectrum. So celiac disease is one end of the spectrum where it's very severe, but you can also have what's called non-celiac gluten sensitivity. And in those cases, either mild or moderate gluten sensitivity, where you still get symptoms, even though you might test negative on celiac blood tests.
Do you just kind of recommend in general people avoid gluten as much as possible?
Well, I always encourage an elimination followed by reintroduction. And I think that's the gold standard for determining food tolerances and sensitivities. So I have my phase one diet, which is more of an elimination diet where you eliminate gluten, dairy, eggs, soy, and you know a lot of the common allergens. And then I have an 8-week reintroduction plan in the book for how you bring back all those foods. Yes, I do recommend leaving like dairy and gluten until the end, just because there's they're so common in terms of sensitivities. But I don't think every person needs to be like 100% gluten-free. I think if they are otherwise healthy and most importantly have a good microbiome and healthy gut, then they're often able to tolerate some wheat. And in that case, you know, I recommend more of these ancient grains like einkorn wheat or sourdough bread, which is fermented, where a lot of the gluten has been broken down. So those are some healthy ways to include wheat.
And why has the wheat changed so much?
So it's basically because it's been bred to be more productive and increase profits. It's been modified to be a lot more like prolific, that's been genetic modification. So that's where all the chromosomes are different. And then the quality in terms of like nutrient density has actually declined, but that's not what it was bred for. It was bred for productivity.
I also heard that some of the wheat in the U.S. is sprayed with glyphosate, which is a pesticide, after it's been harvested to dry it out, which some people might be a little bit sensitive to glyphosate itself.
Yes, I do think that is a factor because almost all non-organic wheat is treated with glyphosate in the U.S. And I think it's one of the reasons why my patients often can tolerate wheat in other countries like Europe much better than they tolerate the wheat in the U.S. Because they don't use glyphosate the same way and their processing is a little, you know, less severe than what happens to the weed in the US. So I definitely think that's part of the puzzle.
Yeah, anecdotally, I have a lot of friends who are gluten intolerant in the States, and then they travel abroad and can tolerate gluten.
Yeah, a common thing I hear from my patients.
Yeah. And I would love to just talk a little bit about your experience with the Tiger Protocol and introducing the diet. What have you seen in your patients? What are some of the symptom changes that you've noticed? And how long does it usually take?
So in terms of the full Tiger Protocol, I usually walk people through it over about 3 months or so. I think that the benefits they see typically are reduced inflammation, and therefore their autoimmune condition is more quiet. And then, you know, there is an important distinction between cure and remission. So autoimmune diseases can't be cured generally, but they can go into remission, which means that they can become quiescent and not cause symptoms. So that's the goal. And usually patients have an easier time achieving remission with the minimum number of medications once they're following the protocol completely.
Mm. And so you're working the protocol along with other forms of medication as well?
Yes. I definitely tell people not to suddenly go off their medications, whatever their specialist has put them on. And then, you know, we always try gradually to like reduce the dosages or reduce the number if there's like multiple medications. But I work very closely with the patient's other doctors to do that, so we're not kind of creating rebound issues.
Mm, perfect. And so the other day, my patients, I was explaining inflammation to my patients. I was talking about how the body can create inflammation. All of these environmental or just, psychological stressors can cause inflammation in the body. And they asked me, what is inflammation? And I would love to have a really good answer to that. So what is inflammation?
Yes. Yes. Great question. So we have to distinguish acute from chronic inflammation. So acute inflammation is when you, for example, stub your toe and it becomes red and swollen, and that's part of the healing response, should only last like at most a few days, and then it's healthy. But when inflammation becomes chronic, long-term, then it can cause damage to your internal organs, to tissues. And I always tell people it's kind of like you're a part of your body's on fire, where the inflammation is localized there. And then with autoimmune disease, it's like your whole body's on fire because the immune system pervades everything. And I sometimes try to explain it that way to patients. Mm.
Succinct. I like that. And I would love to also talk a little bit about the nuance between conventional medicine and more functional and Ayurvedic medicine. So what do you feel like conventional medicine is missing? And likewise, what do you think maybe more a holistic approach or Ayurvedic medicine is missing in this day and age?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think conventional medicine is very strong at treating acute illnesses, treating acute infections. It's life-saving, you know, in so many cases. The challenge is that it does not really address root cause. So that's not really in the purview of conventional medicine. And all holistic modalities like Ayurveda or functional medicine pay attention to those root causes. So once you take care of the acute symptoms with conventional medicine, then I think it behooves people to give attention to those root causes in the long run, because with chronic diseases, addressing those drivers can really help improve outcomes. So in the long run, it really pays off.
Mm. And I really do love the integrative medicine approach, because functional medicine I really appreciate as well, but it also is very much, in the weeds, and it's very data driven, and integrative medicine can have a little bit more holistic approach, I feel like. But there are a lot of modalities that integrative medicine uses that are from other cultures. And so how do we practice integrative medicine without co-opting other people's cultures and taking it as our own?
Oh, yes, that's a very good question. So I think it's important to, if you're seeking out an integrative medicine practitioner, to really understand what training they have had, because sometimes, you know, a doctor just attends a weekend course in acupuncture and then they claim they're a, you know, Chinese medicine practitioner. Whereas if you have a, like in my case, I've done a fellowship program, which is certified in integrative medicine over a couple of years. Or there's also now board certification in integrative medicine, which is another way to know that something is valid. And so I think that the giving each modality the respect it needs, the proper length of time to study. You know, I studied Ayurveda for many years, and I still think of myself as a beginner. So I think having that humility and having that respect for the system is very important.
Thank you. I very much appreciate that answer. And lastly, we ask all of our guests to finish the following sentence. The future is blank.
Well, I would have to say integrative medicine, because I do think that patients really want this type of care. There's a high demand for it. There's really more demand for it than we can be met in within medicine, because, you know, we have such a long waiting list. And this is the same for all around the country, integrative medicine centers. So I think more and more people are wanting that. And I believe it's going to be better for the outcomes in chronic diseases and to address the out of control healthcare costs in this country. You know, so many of these things are low cost, like working on your diet, working on stress, working on exercise and sleep. So I do think the future is with integrative medicine.
That's perfect. Also, I actually, that isn't my last question. I did want to ask about the Paleo Vedic diet and what does that entail? Because I've heard paleo before, and then seems like there's an Ayurvedic component to it. So do you mind describing that to the listeners and myself?
Absolutely. So the Paleo Vedic diet is ultimately a plant-based diet, because I think in paleo, in the mainstream, you think about like a lot of meat and not necessarily vegetables. But if you look at what our ancestors ate for millions of years, it was mostly plant foods like leaves and berries and roots and so forth. So I strongly emphasize that foundation for paleo. And then Ayurveda is all about customizing the diet to each person's body type. And we know there's no one size fits all when it comes to diet, but people need a lot more guidance on what to specifically eat. You know, how do they really customize the diet for themselves? And that's the real strength of Ayurveda, because it can kind of teach people about their unique body type. So figuring out some of your what are called doshas, or the forces in the body that comprise and create the body type. And then there's completely different diet recommendations based on that. So it can really help individualize things.
Very cool. And then do you mind describing a little bit more in detail, like what a dosha is?
Oh, yes. So there's basically three main doshas, which are vata. You can think about that as wind, roughly. And then there's pitta, which is fire, and then kapha, which is earth. And Ayurveda is based on the five element theory. So the five elements create these three doshas, which are both physical and psychological. And then the balance between those three either leads to health or disease. So Ayurveda is more of a qualitative system, you know, not as quantitative as Western medicine, but really focusing on qualities of foods, qualities of the person, and keeping those qualities in balance.
I love that. I'm very interested in the intersection of human and planetary health. And yes, there's been a lot of media about the fires in Canada and polluting the air in, you know, New York City, and then, of course, other places in the U.S., but a lot of people are in New York City, so they focus on that. And it seems like the earth is a little bit out of balance in the elements and a little bit inflamed itself, so everything is very connected.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think you know, the eating or following an organic diet is also better for the environment because you're supporting farmers who are using less pesticides. And, you know, a lot of these chemicals are what they call forever chemicals, meaning they're around for many years, centuries or longer before they break down. So the more we can kind of like reduce pollution and encourage organic farming, I think that that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dr. Akhil, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience?
I think the final thing I would say is that mindset is very important when it comes to autoimmune disease or really any chronic disease. And just believing that you can feel better is really important, you know, wherever you're starting off. And many of my patients have told me that, you know, I'm the first doctor who has told them that they could feel better. And I think in medicine, we are often very good at conveying statistics. And, you know, we know that some of these diseases are chronic, but we don't often give people enough hope that they can feel better. And so I think having that positive mindset, it makes all the difference.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Well, Dr. Akhil, this has been a really great conversation. I've learned so much. Thank you for all the work that you do. I really appreciate it. And thank you for spending time with me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Amanda. Yeah, I really enjoyed our conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.